Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. My name is Becky Clark, and I'm Operations Manager at CRA Resources. Today, we are sitting down with Angela Roberts, Head of Recruiting, and special guest Brian Dempster. Brian is Executive Director of Clinical Operations at Fate Therapeutics with a mission for better cells for better therapies. And before we get started, make sure to visit creresources.com/blog to catch up on our latest blog posts. You can also sign up there to get this content delivered to your inbox. And I'll turn it over to Angela, and she can give us more details for our topic today.
Thank you, Miss Becky. And Brian, thank you for being here today. I'm super excited to have you. And,
welcome back.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to be back.
Brian is an advocate, and he listens to our podcast. And we dropped a podcast that we had recorded with Lyle G., one of our favorite podcasters. And it was about soft skills and employability. And Brian thought, you know what, this is great, but I think we should talk about conflict management, you know, just conflict in general, how to resolve it, how to manage it, and all of that. I love this idea because I think especially, well, in any industry, but especially in this industry, clinical research is so completely different than other industries that I've worked in. And how well you handle conflict, how well you manage it and resolve it, can make or break not only your career, but the studies and what you're trying to accomplish as a company as well. And so today I thought we could talk about why it matters. How do you assess your skills? How as an employer, you can assess your team member skills and how to grow them, how to improve them. And so welcome, Mr. Brian. Thank you
so much. Thanks, Angela. I listened to, I think it was about a month ago, you had Lyle talk about soft skills on the podcast. And I always think that the measure of a good podcast is when you're listening to it. And I was actually in the car listening to it, and I found myself interjecting as you were talking. And I couldn't understand why you weren't listening to me. And I was thinking, no, it's not a conversation. It's a podcast. But there were so many points in that podcast that just hit home to me, and just so many really good points. I just kind of felt like I was part of the conversation. It was great. And I think you had me right at the beginning with soft skills, and you said, look, there's an eye roll alert because we don't like to talk about soft skill. And I thought that's so true. You know, we're in a scientific based industry where soft skills are almost seen as kind of, you know, something that everybody already has and we don't need to be trained on because it's kind of pseudoscience or something. It's the antipathy of what we're actually doing, which is our real science. And that is such a bad position to start from, because actually, and you made this point on the podcast, you know, soft skills are what make or break you. The science is really important. Of course, you have to have that. But ultimately, how you communicate that science and how you bring everybody along on the journey of that science, it comes down to how well you can interact with people interpersonally. And that is something that's just almost overlooked universally, I think. And we all go on a lot of training courses for it, but the people start those training courses with the premise of this is not real science, this is not real, it's fuzzy wuzzy stuff that I don't need to be involved in. And I suffered from that a little bit earlier in my career, and this was where the conflict management piece came in, because earlier in my career, I definitely had a leaning towards conflict, I would say. I wasn't scared to take on a fight, is how I would describe it. And because of that, I kind of didn't do anything to avoid those conflicts. And I went on a course. My journey to understanding conflict management really went on when I was about 30, and I went on a course for social styles, and I approached it with that attitude of, oh, this is soft skills, it's not real, you know, it's not cell biology, or it's like those kind of things. And I approached it, and it was really eye-opening, because what they did was hold up a mirror to me, and they said, actually, are you this type of person? Can you categorize yourself in these behaviors? And if so, you need to think about how that's perceived by others. And that was probably the first time, I'm ashamed to say, in my 30s, you know, I'd been working for like 7 or 8 years by then, that I actually thought, oh, it matters how other people perceive me, not just how I go about myself. And I think actually that's still something that's sadly lacking in the air. I think that there is this feeling that these competencies are somehow universally gifted to people, and not something that needs to be trained and nurtured and really understood and practiced on an ongoing basis. And there was also that period where I then had to start to really reflect on my behaviours as an individual. And one of the things that my dad, who's an engineer, by the way, is that, you know, it's a completely different industry. But all the way time I was growing up, he used to say to me, Brian, you've got two ears and one mouth. Right? And there's a purpose to this, you know. Yeah. Do twice as much listening as you do speaking. Right. Mm-hmm. And that suddenly came to the fore. I suddenly understood what that meant. And it was a really interesting period for me of this awakening in how to perceive, how other people perceive my behaviours, and how I can adapt my behaviours in order to be a better communicator. But the area that really, really made a difference was in conflict, because in our industry, whether we like it or not, and I don't know if this is the same for other industries, I imagine it is, but certainly in the clinical research industry, because you have so many different stakeholders involved in so many different parts of the process, there is an opportunity for conflict around every corner.
Over every topic. And it doesn't Absolutely. Even matter what the topic is, does it?
No, not at all. And what I find is, going back to looping back into that kind of, we don't train people to recognize this, we don't teach those competencies, we don't you know, practice better behavioral competencies, because that opportunity for conflict is everywhere, it's amazing how many people take it, you know, when it can be avoided. There's, you know, and going back to kind of my teenage years, I think when you're a teenager, I don't know, lots of, certainly when I was a teenager, lots of people read The Art of War and Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance and all of these kind of books that were on your reading list you had to do. And there's an expression in Sun Tzu's Art of War, it's the greatest victory is that which requires no battle. And that's where you should start from a conflict management perspective. You should recognize where the conflict is coming from and then say, okay, how do I get through this without actually fighting a battle? Because the other piece of that for me is then why are you fighting the battle? You know, there's this imaginary battle. What's the purpose to win it? You know, if the purpose of fighting this battle when you see this conflict is because I want to win the battle, what does that achieve? And that goes back to another, I guess, really seminal moment in my career, really formative moment in my career, which is when I was doing really well in my career in some instances, but I couldn't make the next leap to the next level of management. And I was working for a pretty big blue chip pharma company at the time, or biotech company at the time, and I'd been moved all around the world with different positions, and I'd started to get the title of the king of lateral moves. People say to me, it never gets promoted, you just get to move to a different country to do this thing. And it was great, you know, great opportunities. And I actually, this is kind of wondering about how to kind of break through barriers in your career. This is I think is a good piece of advice from my personal experience. I actually literally bumped into a senior VP at this company. I walked around the corner and bumped into this guy, and he happened to be a Welshman, and I was in the US at the time. So we had this kind of, you know, very, very, very limited connection of nationality, in that I was English and he was Welsh. And I kind of introduced myself, and I said to him, just on the spur of the moment, I said, you know, would it be possible to meet with you and just talk about my career? And I was surprised. He went, absolutely, I'd love to do that. Come out. And it took 3 months to get an appointment with him because he's an incredibly busy guy. But when I met with him, he'd actually done a little bit of research, which was the second surprising thing for me, because who was I, some lowly, manager. And the anecdote here that's important is he said to me, do you think that you are somebody who is collaborative? And I said, oh, I never really thought about it. And he said, you're not. So it's important that you recognize this.
And you are not.
Yeah, he said, you're not a collaborative person. I said, oh, this is news to me. I thought I was doing well and I thought I was getting good results. And he said, look, I've spoken to lots of people about you over the last 3 months to kind of prepare for this meeting. He said, and you are a divisive person. He said, like 50% of the people say, oh, he'll get the job done. He's great. He said, other 50% of people say, oh, I can't stand working with him, which was really, hard to hear. And he said, you're not collaborating. You're just focused on getting the job done. You're not focused on bringing people on. And he said, and my reaction to that was to kind of say, well, why is that so important? I've got the job done. And this was the piece of advice that he gave me. And he said, look, if you're trying to impress people like me by winning these battles that you're creating, that you're not avoiding, you're wasting your time. He said, I don't care who wins the battle. The battle's not real. It's imaginary. It's in your head. I don't care who wins it. He said, what I care about is whether or not you've been able to bring everybody along with you to a successful conclusion, so that when you get that result, I don't have to then go back, or other managers don't have to go back and repair the damage in people's people's psyche, if you like, because you've won this imaginary battle. And that was amazing to hear, and actually I reflect on that often now when I'm in a situation where I talk to people in conflict situations who are trying to manage, and I'm trying to coach them on managing conflict situations, because I'm in a position now where he was. And I think to myself, I'm not interested in who wins this battle, because it's imaginary. It's your battle. I'm only interested in whether or everybody gets to be brought along to a successful conclusion.
Yeah. I love this. And I want to unpack that just a bit, because when I was with IBM, I started out as just a line manager with IBM, and then I continued to climb the ranks. And whenever I left IBM after a 10-year career, I was a senior transformation executive, and I had like 17,000 people reporting up through my programs. And Sam Palmisano, who was the CEO, was my second line. So, no glass ceilings with IBM, anybody out there listening. But with that being said, I had to go to what they called the Big Blue Leadership Program. Every month, they would have a course that all leaders had to participate in at some point. You had a cycle that you had to do. And it was, at the time, I didn't realize that it was really all about soft skills, but now I know, because they called it leadership. And technically, leadership is probably one of the soft skills that could be argued as both a hard science and a soft skill. Mm-hmm. Because leadership has so much structure around it, because there's a whole difference between managing and leader. And so what we focused on is being a leader. And in order to be a leader, you have to have the ability to, people need to want to follow you into battle.
Yes,
as a leader, absolutely, they're just going to follow you, right? Absolutely. As a manager, you got to like whip them with a whip. They'll still go, but they don't want to, right? So there's like two different things. And one of the things that we did over and over and over and over and over again is we would do these personality assessments. And so you learn the science of personalities. There's 12 distinct personalities. Everybody's motivated different ways, blah, 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 blah. And then you learn the soft skills to be able to learn the different personalities of the individuals that you're leading and how to motivate them and how to deal with any conflict might arise, et cetera, et cetera. And conflict management was probably one of the biggest ones that we had to deal with as far as learning how to deal with it. And it matters a lot. And it's not that you have to, all of you guys out there listening, this doesn't mean you have to have a title as a leader or a manager in order to feel like it's important to have the ability to manage conflict. Mm-hmm. You as a CRA are a leader.
Yes.
You as a CTA are a leader. An ETMF specialist, you better daggone well know that you are leading the team and making sure that that TMF is updated. You're a leader. Guess what? Spoiler alert. All of us out there that are competent in our skills or in our roles are leaders, which means you've got to have the ability to be able to handle conflict in order to be graced with the title and the recognition as the leader of your role or the team or whatever it is that you're trying to do.
That's absolutely right, Angela. That goes back to that earlier point. You know, conflict, or the potential for conflict, it's not conflict, the potential for conflict is around every corner.
Yep.
If you're a CRA going in and say, I've got to get this coordinator to write this query, coordinator doesn't want to write the query.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, well, no, because that's going to make my look like I entered the data wrong in the first place, or, you know, whatever it might be. Then you're immediately, it's recognizing. That's the first part of conflict management, because, yeah, I'll come to another point in a moment, but the first part of conflict management is being able to recognize the potential for it. Where's the potential conflict coming from here? And how do I, if possible, how do I avoid that becoming an escalating to a combative situation or a conflict situation? Because what you don't want to do is combative. You know, it's called conflict management, not conflict avoidance. I actually don't have a problem with conflict per se. I think that, you know, the expression of a disagreement of ideas is actually really healthy. It's necessary. You know, conflict avoidance or conflict management that runs along the line of just do what everybody else wants you to do isn't conflict avoidance. You're just taking the conflict further down the road. You're just becoming embittered by, oh, that person just bullied me into doing what I want to do. So actually, that's a really important point that you made there, where conflict isn't, it's not conflict avoidance, it's conflict management. And the first part of that is recognizing where that potential conflict is and then drawing up a plan as to how you're going to approach that.
Exactly.
And by the way, you know, there are times where a combative stance is a perfectly acceptable tool in your management toolbox of conflict. And I'll give you an example of that, where I was, you know, some years ago, I witnessed an executive leader talk to a junior member of staff like they'd peel off their shoe in a room full of other people. And it was absolutely, you know, and I was amazed at how many people kind of just accepted that. They were like, oh, well, that's just, and I come from a background and this is nothing to do with work. This is just, you know, the kind of upbringing. Yeah, I come from a background where I'm like, nobody deserves to be spoken to like that, and that person was
especially
left
not in front of other team members.
Absolutely,
there's a morale impact, and
there's just no benefit. It's just an ego trip, right? And that person was left with no illusion as to my propensity to be combative if the circumstances required it. You know, it's like, but it was a control. I didn't kind of go off on one at him and say, oh, you. I kind of quietly took him aside and then said, look. You know, let me make this clear. This isn't happening again. You know, and it doesn't matter what your position is or what their position is. That's like, that is not happening again. And that's a perfectly acceptable tool to have in your conflict management group. I didn't carry it on. I didn't, you know, speak to him 3 weeks later and go, hey, you remember that conversation we had where I said this? You know, it's like, I'm just going to relive it again. It was done and dusted. And that remove that conflict from the agenda forever, because
in his situation, he wasn't managing conflict, he was causing it. And I think that's the big difference here, isn't it? Is because Becky will tell you, she sat in on our morning huddles, and you know, I'm a very supportive leader, but there are times when I am very clear and stern too, and,
right.
And you know,
as
and I've had
be,
but there's a difference, you know. I mean, you're backing it with data, and you bring up things in front of the entire team that benefits the entire team, because you're seeing a trend across situations rather than calling out one individual in front of a large group of people. And that goes back to why it's so important to have really strong conflict management skills, because you know, if you're constantly in conflict with a team member, Now you've just closed down communications with them. There's no such thing as an open door anymore. They're not going to come to you and talk to you about what's really going on. You're going to miss a lot of insights as to what's happening in the business or on their team or anything like that. They're going to be afraid to tell you about errors. They're not going to want to grow within your business. Yeah. So now we've got a morale issue. And then other team members are going to see it. You're going to have attrition. I mean, it's a big thing. So as a leader, it's a huge thing. But I guess I would argue is conflict management. I mean, it can be that way everywhere, can it? I mean, the whole mean girl syndrome, I call it mean girl syndrome, right? Is just being able to go pick battles and fight whenever, what are you getting out of it?
So. Right, exactly. That's it. It's like, you know, choose another important part of conflict management. And again, it's conflict management, right? Not conflict avoidance, is choose the hills you want to die on. Yeah. Is the expression, right? It's like, is this really worth me getting into conflict? Or you know, be that, because then when you do take that kind of more controversial approach where you say, no, actually, no, I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to move forward on this. It has a much more powerful message than if you're just the person who's just always kind of like, well, if I recognize conflict, I'm just going to attack it. So an enormous part of conflict management, which isn't taught, is do you recognize the opportunity for it? And having recognized the opportunity for it, do you have a strategy for dealing with it? Mm-hmm. You know, is your strategy, to your point right there, Angie, is your strategy, do you know what? I can give them, like, I give them this win because that'll help me next time. It's like, it doesn't matter to me. I lose nothing by this person taking this route in this particular circumstance. So maybe I'll just avoid this conflict altogether. Or do you make a strategy where you say, actually, no, that's just going to create a problem for me right now, or it's going to create a problem for me down the road, in which case I need to push back against this. And that is perfectly acceptable. But it's then you have to have a strategy. But how am I going to push back against this in such a way that that person doesn't feel like I'm an obstacle, but that actually I'm pushing back in a constructive way?
Stay tuned for part 2 as we continue our discussion on conflict management with Brian Dempster.